Thanks everybody for attending the meeting. This is our second shot at our scoping meeting for the Vistra battery energy storage project. Last scoping meeting we had was last Tuesday, and we had some sort of technical issues and we didn't get started about 20 minutes after four. So we thought we'd do it again just in case folks got frustrated with trying to access the meeting, because it was only via Zoom then, and now we're back in person, which is nice. Actually, it's nice to see some faces in the audience. Appreciate those of you that came. Thank you. I think with that, we'll just hop into it. I'm going to turn it over to Cindy Jason, our senior planner, to start the presentation, and then she'll be followed by Chris Burzbach, our consultant with Rincon Consulting, to kind of go into the details of what the scoping meeting is for. And then I think at the end, Cindy will have a little bit more of the presentation at the very end prior to Ash. Prior to us opening it up for questions and comments. So, Cindy.
Thank you, Scott, and good evening. Welcome, everyone. This is the public comment meeting on the notice of preparation that was recently released for the EIR being prepared for the 1290 Embarcadero Battery Energy Storage System Project. This is not a Planning Commission or a City Council hearing, so this is just for the public comment meeting. And our presentation will provide a brief summary of the proposed project, and that will be discussed in some slides coming up. On the screen before you, you see an aerial image of the project. The yellow boundary depicts the project site boundary, and the purple is the project parcel boundary. In addition, the presentation will provide a timeline of the project process, a description of the environmental review procedures, and an opportunity to comment after the presentation on the project environmental review scope. If you wish to provide a comment regarding the scope of the environmental review, please wait until we provide an opportunity after the presentation, at which time we will open it up for public comment with the time of up to 3 minutes per commenter. If you wish to provide written comment during or after this meeting, we will provide contact info at the end of the presentation. All verbal and written comments will be reviewed and responded to in the public draft EIR for the project. And I'd like to be very clear, our meeting today is exclusive to the content of the draft EIR. This is not a decision maker meeting. So we would just ask that comments regarding the merits of the proposed project are held until the project is presented before the Planning Commission and City Council. As the decision makers, it is their role to consider not only the environmental analysis, but the merits of the project. So what's the purpose of a scoping meeting? The scoping meeting is intended to inform the community and resource agencies about the proposed project. It is to solicit input regarding issues the environmental impact report should address. And it is to inform the community about future opportunities for input on the proposed project. This slide includes the agenda for today, the project background and overview. We will be giving a CEQA overview EIR scoping session, and this is when we will have Chris Burzbach from Rincon Consultants, who is our environmental consultant, go over what is an EIR, the EIR process, and key environmental issues. And then we will discuss project schedule and next steps, projected schedule, and then the public scoping comment period. A little bit of project background for you. The location, 1290 Embarcadero. This is the location of the 95-acre Morro Bay power plant property. That power plant has been idle since its retirement in 2014. The project site includes 24 acres previously developed with above-ground fuel or oil storage tanks, and those were removed in 2011. The project site has a land use designation of visitor serving commercial with a mixed use residential overlay, and that is the land use designation as of the adoption of our 2021 general plan LCP coastal land use plan. Some other important things to note, there is a PG&E deed restriction which prohibits developing portions of the property with lodging, healthcare facilities, schools, and recreational uses. The Department of Toxic Substance Control land use restriction restricts future uses on the tank farm portion of the property to commercial and industrial uses. And also our plan Morro Bay, which is our general plan LCP, has policy LU 5.4, which requires a master plan be done for the redevelopment of the former site or power plant site, property and surrounding area. The project overview. So the project site consists of a 43-acre portion of the power plant property. And I apologize, it's missing the words, but that was intended to say located at 1290 Embarcadero. And for those interested, we will we can put this PowerPoint presentation on the current planning project's website at the conclusion of the meeting. The proposed project includes three main components. The first is that it is proposing construction and operation of a 600 megawatt battery energy storage system on approximately 24 acres overall of the project site. It includes demolition and removal of the existing power plant building and stacks. And then three, it includes adoption of phase one of the master plan, which would change the land use designation of the battery site from visitor serving commercial to general light industrial. This is a preliminary site plan of the proposed project. This site plan page is also on the city's current planning projects page, which you can also access. We created a shortcut. You can go to the city's website at www.morrobayca.gov/BESS. That's a quick way to, if you wanted to see this. We do have this posted on our website. But this is just a preliminary site plan of what the applicant has submitted. And at this point, I will be turning it over to our environmental consultant, RINCON, and Chris Bursbach will continue with the presentation and will provide the CEQA overview. And Chris, and he's participating virtually, so that's why you do not see him physically in the room. Should have said that at the beginning.
All right, we can hear Chris now.
Hello there.
Okay, there you go. Hi, Chris.
So you guys are hearing me in the room now, is that correct?
We are.
All right, thank you. And I apologize that I'm having to attend remotely this evening, but I appreciate the city for making that possible. My name is Chris Bursbach. I'm a senior environmental planner with RINCON Consultants. We're the city's environmental consultant on this project, and RINCON and myself have worked with the city for several years on a number of projects, including the recent general plan local coastal program update that Cindy mentioned earlier. So I'm going to be speaking this evening about the environmental review for the battery storage project that Cindy's described, what the city is doing now that the notice of preparation has been released, and the overall environmental review process. The city is preparing a draft EIR for this project pursuant to the requirements of the California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA. An EIR is the most comprehensive and detailed level of environmental review available. However, the scope of the environmental review in the EIR is limited to the physical environmental effects of the project. An EIR doesn't evaluate social or fiscal effects of a project, so any questions regarding the social or fiscal effects of this project would be considered during public hearings with the Planning Commission and City Council at the time the project goes before those bodies. And those public hearings for the project aren't formally scheduled yet, but we expect the project to go before the Planning Commission and City Council in early 2023. And I'll show a little bit more detail on the schedule in a later slide. But the purpose of the EIR is to provide the public with the opportunity to better understand the environmental impacts that could result from this project. And for any environmental impacts identified during the review process, the EIR will also describe mitigation measures to reduce or eliminate impacts. Next slide, please. So this slide shows the EIR process from start to finish. At this point, the city is beginning to prepare a draft EIR for the project, which will be publicly released for review and comment when complete. After the draft EIR is released for public review, staff will respond to all written and verbal comments and compile the comments, responses, and any necessary revisions to the draft EIR into a final EIR. And then the City Council will use the final EIR and the public's comments as one of multiple pieces of information that they'll consider to support their determination to either approve or deny the project. Next slide, please. This slide shows the range of topics that will be discussed in the draft EIR. These are environmental topics listed in the notice of preparation and are part of the CEQA statute. That means that all of the topics shown on this slide are potential effects of the project that will need to be evaluated in the environmental document. And many of these topics may not be significantly impacted by the project, but the city anticipates the project could significantly impact some of these environmental topics, and the EIR will include mitigation measures that would reduce or eliminate potential environmental impacts to any of these issue areas. Next slide, please. This slide is a summary of the key components of the project that Cindy presented earlier, but I want to revisit the project description in the context of how the EIR will evaluate potential impacts. The analysis is limited to the impacts of the project and any reasonably foreseeable outcomes of the project on the environment. Potential impacts would be evaluated in comparison to what's called the environmental baseline, which is the current existing conditions on the ground at the time the notice of preparation was released. Next slide. Here we have a typical schedule for environmental review of the project based on the notice of preparation release, which occurred at the beginning of this month. As shown, the public scoping period is open through July 3rd, and our next major step will be preparing the draft EIR in a manner that satisfies the statutory requirements of the California Environmental Quality Act and responds to any comments that we receive during this scoping period. We expect to be releasing a public draft EIR for the project before the end of this year, and having a final EIR prepared by early next year, which would support Planning Commission and City Council's public hearings on the project around spring of 2023. Next slide. So I'd like to wrap up my portion of the presentation by reiterating the focus of this evening's meeting. We're here to listen to and record public comments on the scope of the draft EIR. Those may include the potential environmental effects that would be evaluated in the EIR, any technical questions or concerns that reviewers have noted with the planned approach to the environmental review, or any mitigation measures that may reduce potential environmental impacts. We're asking commenters to help us by focusing their comments on the scope of the EIR, rather than any opinions or statements about the merits of the proposed project. As Cindy noted, that is the purview of the City Council to consider in their public hearings on the project. All comments heard verbally in tonight's hearing or received in writing during the public comment period will be responded to in the draft EIR. And with that, I'll hand the presentation back over to Cindy to wrap things up for us.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks, Chris. So thank you for listening thus far to our presentation. This slide here summarizes the scoping comments. It is a 30-day public scoping period. That 30-day period ends on July 3rd. This is our second of two meetings. The first one was virtual. You can provide public comment by either speaking at today's meeting. You can send postal mail or an email to myself at the address noted on the screen, which is at the city's community development department on 955 Shasta Avenue. My email is on the screen, and we would ask that you make the subject line state battery energy storage system project EIR. And with that, I will conclude the staff and consultant presentation, and we will open it up for scoping comments. Thank you. And did you want to add anything, Scott?
Just from the standpoint, since we don't have a highly full house here, happy as Ms. Winholtz asked, are you limited to 3 minutes? And as long as you're not going like 10 or 15 minutes, I think we're good. So someplace between 5 and 10 would be great, given the amount of folks in the audience, I think would be good. And that also allows us to take comments over the phone or Zoom. So have at it.
I guess I'm it. Well, I'm glad to be here today. Thank you for having this presentation. I really appreciate it. Well, I'm going to introduce myself right now. I'm Gary Johnson, resident of Morro Bay. I'm living two blocks from the process over here. And I want to introduce myself as my background. I'm a highly degreed metallurgical engineer, supporting the space program for 40 years. 12 years of that was in research, working with semiconductor materials and elements. Excuse me, man, I gotta put my glasses on here. Well, anyway, I'm not against lithium-ion battery storage, but I'm in favor of this technology 100%. I've been around. Well, thank you so much. Oh, hey, there we go. Okay, with that said, I am totally against a lithium-ion storage facility in the community like Morro Bay. Remember, the decision was made by the city council to move the sewer system plant because of possible tsunami. This lithium-ion storage system is at the same level as our former sewer plant. How common is it for lithium batteries to catch on fire or to explode? While lithium batteries have been built in protection to stop from overcharging, if the charging system fails for any reason, a fire cannot be put out immediately and the temperature reaches 1,000 degrees F, there will be an explosion. That's all over the world that's happened, just like the dive boat in Santa Barbara. Manufacturing defects using low quality components is one of the greatest causes of battery failures. Also, do the components in the storage system, the day coats. Day code's very important because if you do have a failure, you've got to follow where those things, where they were manufactured. And that was my job as a failure analysis engineer for the space program. So the design may be a good one. I'm not disputing that, but it may have problems too. Lithium-ion batteries are very sensitive to mechanical damage, which could lead to earthquake explosions and fires. The storage facility is close to several earthquake faults, and if and when a tsunami hits this area, we're all in trouble. Lithium reacts violently with moisture, water, steam, and produce heat. Flammable elements are explosive. Hydrogen gas, toxic lithium hydroxide elements, this isotope 6 that can cause cancer. In summary, I want to say, Morro Bay is not the place for a lithium-ion lithium storage system. Is it worth taking a chance to have an explosion in one of these pods? If it does, it's over for our community. This most beautiful area on the Central Coast would be ruined for future generations. A good place for a facility that needs to be in an area like the Diablo Nuclear Power Plant. The plant in Lost Landing is okay, since it is not located near a populated community. Actually, homes are not allowed to be near the area. I live 2 blocks from it. The truck traffic and operational facility would be noisy and destructive. Continued damage to the roads that have already been damaged due to the sewer project. Now, who's going to be paid for the extra fire protection? Also, there has to be an evacuation plan. Definitely has to have one. Hospital personnel nearby will have to be trained to handle the exposure of toxic material. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. And whoever wants to come up next, we would appreciate it if you do give your name, but it's certainly not a requirement. It just helps us in record keeping. So. Oh, no, you did. I was just saying for the other folks in the audience, that's all.
Hello, my name is Barry Brannon, and I'd like to relay a battery storage issue that's really hit me in the face. About 18 months ago, I was fortunate enough to be able to buy a new car, and I bought a Toyota Avalon, which is a hybrid. And love the car, 44 miles a gallon. Who's not to love it? So I'm researching it on YouTube, and I find a little interesting YouTube video that says very clearly, do not, store any liquids in the back seat. Because if you store it in the back seat, and the liquids leak down through the upholstery, that's where the batteries are. And those batteries will not take moisture of any kind. So driving it home, I live near the beach. I don't know what your humidity is. It's about 78% all the time in Morro Bay at night. It gets to 100%. I don't see how there's any way that you can properly ventilate and keep the moisture out of these lithium-ion battery storage. This is the wrong project for this location. I think we need storage. There are other ways to do it, but But for, this is not the highest and best use of a property. The people who bought it want to use it, fine. I don't think this is the right place to do it. And I think the explosive nature of this project is much too great to expose the city to. Thank you.
So I noticed that this type of EIR is a program EIR. It's supposed to focus on the environment, like the expert said. In the document that I read online, it also talked that this would be a tiering EIR in that you will be using the EIR that was in the general plan and then build on that. And I did not go back and look at that EIR, but I will be curious to do that after this meeting now. So I have a list of about 13 concerns, all of which are normally probably inside of the EIR. One is the tiering itself, what you're going to accept of what was in the old the general plan EIR, and how that relates to this. I was initially concerned because there are no alternatives offered, so there's nothing for the public to respond to, and maybe that's part of the public hearing that will come later, because up here they asked us for possible alternatives, and I would just say in alternatives that are generated, I hope that they deal with the whole project, because some of the alternatives that were part of our general plan were just a piece of this and not a piece of that, but it didn't address the whole document. I'm concerned about the rezoning. You know, it's limited because of the PG&E thing and the Department of Toxic Substances. And when I read the Department of Toxic Substances, I thought it went beyond where the batteries are going to go. So I'm surprised that you want to keep the visitor serving where the stacks are. I'm concerned about the lifetime of this plant. I haven't seen anywhere where it says how long it is. It says they'll start evaluating the batteries after 5 years, but they're good for 20 years. And I was nowhere either identified, will there be any upgrade to the technology? Because I'm assuming this is a fast-moving type of area. So more directly to EIR topics, I think visual is a big issue. The height of the buildings are 30 feet plus 6 feet of air conditioning and other things on top. You have 105-foot tall electrical lines that are going to go in, and there's at least 9 of those. And with all the trees that have been taken out along the bike path, there's no way that this is not going to be seen from Highway 1, our scenic highway. And this project, as described, only addresses the visuals from the Embarcadero. And I think you have to address it from Highway 1 as well. What else? And so not only are the buildings really tall, and I don't know how far down they're going to take the 40 feet of dirt that's already there. And so is this 30 feet on top of the 40 feet? So it's going to look like 70 feet, or they can knock the berms down. Plus the 105 tall wires and stuff are going to be up there. So related to that is my concern about noise and vibration that may come off of all this outside wiring technology, vibration. They talked about water, that they're going to have to do some improvements to their water source. They have to use water for dusting, and as we know from last night's city council meeting, we're on a 5% from state water. And is this the best and highest use of our water? Or will you let them open up another well like they used to have? But the city law says there are no wells inside the city limits that the city doesn't own. I'm concerned about air pollution. 100 to 300 workers at one time. That's 100 to 300 vehicles, I'm just going to assume. They're not creating roads. They're going to put down gravel instead. That creates tons of dust. So I'm concerned about the air pollution. I'm concerned that the roads won't be a hard surface. As Mr. Johnson pointed out, I'm very concerned about the pile driving, because we are either on or near several earthquake faults, and there's going to be 4,500 pile drivings to a depth of 75 feet. And that's just, I don't know how to comprehend that as being a positive. Also, there was a point of saying that some of the machinery is going to have oil, has to be oiled to keep it smooth. And so my question is about, it talks about oil containment around where that oil is going to be. And my question is, what's the quantity of that containment? How do we know it's going to be able to contain enough of that spill should it happen? I'm concerned about lighting, and it says that there won't be any new outdoor lighting, but there will be sensor lighting. But how bright will that be? And we already have, well, there aren't lights there anymore, so I don't know if when they say there's no new lighting, does that mean the old lighting that used to be on the plant that was fairly bright, or does that mean as it is darkened right now? And then the master plan, there's a lot that needs to come out that's just too general for me. And then I would reiterate what Mr. Johnson again said about circulation, not only the 100 to 300 vehicles coming in every day, 5 days a week for 4 years, but then how they're going to be coming in from Quintana and Main Street, how they're going to come in from the Embarcadero. That's a lot of traffic on top of our tourism. So thank you very much.
Hi there, my name is Maddie Davis. And I want to appreciate Gary's comments. He spoke from what he knows, his expertise, and how it's going to affect primarily the healing community here. I would like to speak from what I know, and I work as a naturalist and guide. I've lived on the estuary for years, and I have extensively researched the estuary and the ramifications of some of the projects that have gone in the past and potentially will go in the future. This project is a one that I'm incredibly concerned about from an environmental standpoint and how it's going to affect the estuary ecosystem, how it's going to affect the already established sanctuaries, how it is going to affect the nearshore and offshore ecosystems that our fishermen are so reliant upon. This estuary is an absolute gem. Most people are not aware of how extraordinary it is and what an unusual ecosystem it is. It is one of the last remaining healthy estuaries in the United States, and there are precious few of them in the world. Estuaries are nurseries for many of the nearshore and offshore species. They are protection for the coastal areas, and they are one of the richest, most diverse ecosystems on Earth, only second to a healthy rainforest. And in a healthy rainforest, everybody goes, and all this megaflora and fauna, you see it, it's right there. But what most people haven't had a chance to connect with is how rich this place is and how extraordinary it is. It is subtle. You have to go back into the estuary, see the life, look for it, and understand that we have a number of marine mammals that make their home here. We have an incredible number of birds that come here, migrate here on a yearly basis, and that live here and make this their home. To do anything that would destroy this precious gem that we live on and that we all enjoy, and we actually enjoy the economic benefits of it incredibly, it's mind-boggling to me that this project has even come up before us. The dangers that it presents from an environmental standpoint are numerous. And we all know, whether or not you want to believe in climate change or whatever the causes are, it is happening, and we do have rises in sea level. We also have several fault lines in the area with the potential of some, you know, pretty intense natural disasters that could happen. We've already had tsunami events, and we've been lucky that those tsunami events haven't been closer and we haven't been straight in the line. But that does not mean they can and will not happen in the future. And given those circumstances, the kind of pollution that could happen with the failure of this power plant is extraordinary. It would completely render the estuary a dead zone. It would completely render the North Shore ecosystems dead zones. And that is not acceptable. It's not acceptable to me now. It's not acceptable to my grandchildren and all of our children in the future. This is an ecosystem and a resource to be protected, and that plant should not go in. As far as I'm concerned, the only mitigation, and I don't like the word mitigation because basically it means that, you know, you guys are going to do something that's going to kind of sort of, you know, make a difference. But really, honestly, it's going to allow the destruction of whatever the project is. The only mitigation to me that is absolutely acceptable is that it not happen. That it happens somewhere else in a more appropriate place with a kind of potential damage to a commercial ecosystem cannot happen. Thank you.
Anybody else?
Good afternoon. Tina Metzger, resident of Morro Bay. Excuse me. My concerns are visual resources. I'd like to request key observation points from Highway 1, the harbor track, the beach, the harbor, the sand spit, Casita Street, Black Mountain, and I'll probably think of a few more that I can email to you. I'm also concerned about lighting, night lighting. There's already bright lighting on the football field, and especially now that so many trees are taken out along Highway 1 and the bike path, that's already very bright at sunset. And I would like to know possible evacuation options in case there is a disaster at this project site. I'd like to know who is insuring this project in case there is a disaster, and what mitigation the project is proposing as far as hiding the 36-foot high buildings. I think it would be important to state in the EIR, the draft EIR, reasons why this particular site is necessary, given that it is an iconic site along our California coast. And it's known worldwide, Morro Rock and the harbor. And it's very loved. And I think this type of huge project right at that particular site is problematic in a lot of different reasons. So those are just some of the things that I'm concerned about. Circulation, definitely, with really just one access point. There is the emergency bridge over to Highway 41, Atascadero Road from the plant, but basically there's not much there aren't many options for an emergency evacuation from that area. And those are just some of my concerns at this point, and I thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Anybody else before we turn it to, over to the folks that are on Zoom or have called in?
Can we speak twice?
Come on up, Betty.
You know, I just can't stop. But, well, it occurs to me as I'm listening, and as I even listen to myself, we're only talking about the BESS. We don't even talk about taking down the stacks, which is the middle part of this project. And so I would like to express an environmental concern about that. But whether it's really, I guess I'd like to see an evaluation of the environment if we just leave them and the environment if we take them down. Because it, you know, a lot of dust, a lot of cutting, a lot of noise, a lot of everything is going to happen with that. And so, asbestos, yeah. So, please address that. Thanks.
Sure. All right. Unless there's anybody else, and if you decide you want to speak again, I want to go right now over to the folks that are on phone or on Zoom. But do we have?
I got one. I had mine cut down to 3 minutes. That's why I was. I'm used to doing technical papers where you're allowed so much time. I just want to say about Moss Landing, okay? What I heard, it's still shut down. I've tried to find more research on that. They did have two fires, and one of them was caused by somebody that didn't wire properly and all that. That's another one of my big concerns is when I do my failure analysis engineering on failed projects on the space program is somebody's done something wrong, and I'm really concerned when you've got thousands of switches going in these things, and that's the big concern, switches having a decoder, are they made in China, Taiwan, who are they going to be made? So I just wanted to bring that up about Moss Landing, because that could have been an explosion. I've just been throwing that out. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, AGP, do we have anybody on Zoom or call-in that wants to speak?
Yeah. Yes, we have what looks about five people. I'll start with Alex Perez and allow to talk. So, Alex, if you can unmute and begin. Alex Perez, I've given you permission to speak. If you unmute, you can talk. Okay, we'll come back to him. We can attempt Anthony Ventura. We'll unmute you right now. You can unmute and begin.
Good afternoon. My name is Anthony Ventura. I'm a member of the Southwest Regional Council of Carpenters, Local 805. I was born and raised in San Luis Obispo County, and my family has deep roots in the county. I'm also a representative of Carpenters Local 805. As a representative, we represent close to 2,000 members here locally. I believe the city should require this project to be built utilizing a local and skilled trained workforce. Having a local and skilled trained requirements reduce construction and related environmental impacts like some of the speakers spoke about, but while benefiting the local economy. They do this by having local residents that would work on this project would reinvest right back into the community by shopping locally, and the tax revenue made gets put right back into the city's local economy. Other cities have not hesitated to apply skilled and trained workforce requirements for private developments in their city. Having a local skilled and trained workforce requirements can result in reduction in air pollutant reductions and can reduce and mitigate transportation and greenhouse gas impacts by minimizing vehicle miles traveled. It's time that we take care of our local residents by giving them the opportunity to work close to home so they can be able to go to soccer or Little League baseball games instead of driving 2 hours south for work where another city reaps the benefits from the workers that live outside of our county and take their hard-earned income back to their city. Thank you.
Okay, it looks like Alex Perez looks like he's finally got going there. Alex, you want to go ahead and try?
Yeah, can you hear me? Sorry about that. I was having some technical difficulties with my mute.
Yes,
can you hear me? Awesome. Thank you. My name is Alex Perez. I'm a member of the local 805 Carpenters Union and also a representative. I represent members who live, work, and recreate in the vicinity of the project. And I'm just pushing to try to get a skilled-to-trained workforce to be a part of this project with local hire. These projects are just the beginning as far as with the battery storages. And I believe there will be a lot more to come with these in the near future. So as we start to build these, we should use skilled and trained workforce and local hire to benefit the community with providing jobs for the local people of the towns and counties. And also, if they work in the area, they keep the money in the area, and they just recirculate the financial gain off these projects back into the local community, and you know, help the area out. This year, the South Coast Air Quality Management District found that use of local skilled state certified apprenticeship programs or a skilled and trained workforce with the local hire component can result in pollutant reductions as well. So all these members are people that are driving an hour north or south to work. That this would help, you know, reduce pollution with VHM, vehicle miles traveled, VMPs, I'm sorry. And other cities in the area have in California haven't hesitated to apply skilled and trained workforce requirements for private development projects in their city. So just keep in mind, you know, that as we help these developers put these projects through, let's also help the local residents, community members, uncles, aunts, sons, daughters, and so on. Also benefit from these projects and get themselves in a good career with good jobs, wages, and benefits. That's all I got. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. Our next speaker will be Manly McNinch. I'm allowing you to talk now. You can unmute and begin.
Yes, hello. My name's Manly McNinch. I'm a representative with South.
Manly, can you try again?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
That better? Hello.
Yes, you're coming through now.
Oh, okay, great. All right. So anyway, my name is Manly McNinch. I'm representative of Southwest Carpenters Union. I live in this area. I've worked in this area since 1979, so I've been here quite a while. And I've seen the construction of Diablo Canyon come, and now depending on what news cycle we're on, we might be at the end of Diablo Canyon, or we might not be for a while. There's going to be a lot of jobs if the canyon does get shut down that's got to be replaced, and these projects like this battery storage facility will help put a lot of these men and women to work that are highly skilled, highly trained to be able to work out at the nuclear power plant. And the reason why they have the training they do is because they've all gone through accredited apprenticeship programs. And the one gentleman was concerned about, you know, fires and everything. These are the same batteries that are in all the electric cars that people are driving. And it's built on the same principle, just on a bigger scale. So I think we're all assuming that the cars are safe. So I think the batteries should be safe. But the thing with all this is we need to make sure we get language in any projects coming in like this, that all the work and all the material used in it are built in the United States. No foreign stuff from China, like the gentleman said, should be allowed on any of these kind of projects. It should keep American people working with local, and not just American people, but the people in the local area. It should be skilled and trained, and the city has the ability to put that language in, requiring these companies that are coming in to have the local people have preference over, you know, first preference on the jobs that are coming in. And as the offshore wind industry develops, they're going to need a place to bring those the power from the wind turbines and stuff in. And that's one of the reasons behind the battery storage plant is got to have a place to store the battery, because once they shut the canyon down with the rolling blackouts we have nowadays, folks, we've got to do something to start replacing what's going on. So I just asked the city to be proactive and make these developers that are bringing this and other large projects like this in to where they have to utilize skilled and trained workers. And thank you for your time.
Okay. Our next speaker will be Marcel. Marcel, you can unmute and begin.
Hello. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. Thank you. My name is Marcel. I'm a resident of Los Osos. I have my master's in electrical engineering from Cal Poly. I've been working in the consumer electronics industry for about 10 years, designing and building lithium-ion battery systems for a number of different products. I'd just like to come out and say I fully support this energy storage system project here in Morro Bay. While I do agree with some of the specific concerns from some of the other residents regarding details of building height, lighting, and some of the overhead power line concerns, I respectfully disagree with the framing from some of the other residents regarding the hazards associated with this plant. Yes, there are risks with batteries. We're aware of them. They're all over the news. But there were risks with the existing power plant on this site as well. There are risks with the existing gas stations in the city. There are risks with cars sitting in the parking lots. With all these risks, I really look for us to find ways to mitigate these, right? And modern grid-tied energy storage systems are specifically designed to contain these hazards, compartmentalize any issues that may arise that are due to the batteries or other hazards that occur. The example from Moss Landing, yes, they did have fires there, and yes, they were fully contained. Their fire suppression systems worked as intended. The emergency response worked as intended, and the failure analysis is ongoing to help root cause and fix the issue and make it better for future generations and for future versions. With Diablo Canyon getting shut down eventually, this really gives us a huge opportunity to bring Morro Bay and the Central Coast into the forefront of sustainable development in California. Battery energy storage system is one of the lowest impact, highest value projects that we can bring to this area, taking advantage of the existing infrastructure, the existing zoning, the existing electrical systems that connect it to the rest of the state. I think it's a really great way for us to do that, especially compared to some of the other projects that are being presented that have very high environmental impacts and have a lot more work that needs to get done, like the offshore wind and some of the pressurized air storage that they're looking at as well. So as much as I love the stacks and the iconic image they represent, I'm super excited for us to replace them with modern battery energy storage systems. So I appreciate the council allowing us to speak and look forward to us modernizing the state, starting right here with the Central Coast. Thank you.
Thank you. Up next, we have Pedro Toscano. Pedro, you can unmute and begin.
Hello, good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Pedro Toscano. I am a union representative with the Southwest Regional Council of Carpenters, Local 805. We represent members that live in 9,600 square miles between Ventura, Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo County. 500 to 600 of our members live in the vicinity of this project. And we represent the men and women carpenter members that currently work at Diablo Power Plant and municipalities and public works in the same region as this project. There's much need for the Morro Bay battery storage facility. Our members would like to partake work locally and work on this project, help you guys build a great project of its kind. We would like to also let you guys know that we'd like to continue to be of service and play a part in the solution of nuclear energy into whatever's happening in these days. Please help us prevent environmental impacts in our community and require state accredited apprenticeship programs today for the good paying jobs of tomorrow. I will also like to take a moment to inform everybody in the public that we are We are with the carpenters, and we are building a state-of-the-art facility in the Santa Maria area. And at one point, we would like to invite everybody, all the representatives of Morro Bay, to come and check out our facility and see what we're doing. You know, the apprentices are doing building state-of-the-art facilities, and we would like you to see that. We would also like to invite the environmental organizations like Rincon to come and check it out. That invitation is for everybody. But we'll get to that when we open up that facility in Santa Maria. Thank you very much. Have a good evening.
Thank you. That concludes our commenters in Zoom.
All right, thank you. I'm going to give one other opportunity for folks in the audience, if you'd like, to come up and speak.
I've lived in Morro Bay well over 20 years, and I have a pretty good memory, even at my age. And I remember the day that the sewer plant had to be moved because of a possible, quote the word possible, tsunami in that area. Now, if the tsunami, a large one, were right there, I hate to think of what it would do to a battery plant. It just does not feel safe to me. I have not done that much research on it, just a bit here and there to know that it is not a safe situation. Also, I only live about two blocks away, and I kind of like my house. I don't want to see it buried in a ditch somewhere because of an explosion or burn down. I have one, aside from the fact that we had to move the whole sewer and every street in this town is torn up because of that project. I just tried to come down Quintana a few minutes ago. What a mess. All right, so Anvil, the company that's doing all of this work in Morro Bay, I see them staying at the motel on the corner. I don't think they're local workers. I could be wrong. But I do not think that Anvil is a local company. And while these union men have been all trained to speak about what they think is going to happen, it doesn't work that way around here. Number one, there's not that much place to shop anymore. Everybody I know uses Amazon, which is too bad. But shopping, you're not going to live and shop in this town and work to build this plant. It's just not going to happen. So if somebody can tell me where the Anvil company that's torn up every road in our town is from, let me know. I know they're not Morro Bay people. Thank you.
Can I make another one?
Certainly.
Man, short-term economic gain is a big one for folks. And I've been listening to all of these people, you know, claim that they need to be, we need to have local workers on this project. Assuming that this project is going to go through, and I pray to God that it does not. But I would like to address a couple of pretty glaring misconceptions. And that's from a couple of speakers, and how safe these batteries are. That's very provisional safety. Let me put it that way. Inside a car. And, you know, that's pretty safe. And if this battery facility were inland, if it were maybe at possibly 300 to 1,000 feet in altitude, that provisional safety would go up commensurately. But most people don't realize, and I don't know if that fellow that, you know, was talking about how safe these things are, is that the PG&E plant was placed there because it was optimal for once through cooling and for operating that power plant. That means that that power plant and that site is at exactly sea level. And it is straight down from the harbor mouth, which focuses, that was not the original harbor mouth, and that harbor mouth would focus any kind of rise in sea level straight at that facility. So the provisional safety that they are speaking of is non-existent.
So, if you're going to provide a comment, I would appreciate it if it's related to things you would like us to look at in the EIR. I mean, I understand that you want to rebut some of the things that were said, but it's for this process, it's not that useful. If you do have something that you want to have us look at in the EIR, happy to take that commentary. The other sort of commentary related to what other folks said isn't all that helpful for the scoping process, if I'm being clear. So if you have something that you want to like give us input about things we should study in the EIR, I'd love to hear it.
Well, would the EIR point out that what happens when the facility is no longer in use? Who's going to replace it? Who's going to take it down? Who's going to do all this? Is that going to be in the EIR? Is that an EIR statement?
I think that's...
Technology changes. And look at over the last many years what's happened to our technology. That in 25 years or 50 years, what happens when the technology is no longer using the system that we have now? Now, would that be another question? I mean, what stacks are there sitting there for many years because the technology changes? Now, what about... Well, who's going to, all those modules out there, where are they going to go?
Appreciate the comments. We'll certainly take it under consideration.
Thank okay. You. No, I mean, this is serious work. I mean, okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Anybody else?
I have one.
Okay.
One of the concerns is, and I hope this is in the IR, I apologize if it isn't any... All right, that's probably better there. The fire department, you know, we had the, you know, millions of gallons of oil there. The fire department may have had special equipment for that. I don't know if the fire department would need any additional equipment training to support, you know, to mitigate some of the risks if it goes forward.
Thank you. Anybody else? All right, I think with that, I appreciate everybody showing up. This is great. I'm actually really happy that we had a second one of these and were able to do it in person and you all showed up. So thank you very much. You know, our next steps will be, you know, starting to work on the environmental impact report, taking the input that we received here this evening, incorporating that into the environmental impact report, and eventually we release a draft, and you'll be able to comment on that, and then we'll respond to those comments as well. So that's sort of the process moving forward, and we'll continue to post information on our current project's website for this project. We'll have our presentation from this evening up there, and as we receive additional environmental documentation on the project, we'll be posting that there as well. Again, thank you, and have a good evening.
Are there any workshops or anything like that?
We do have a notification list on Notify Me. You can sign up on that on the website. As part of the master plan, we'll also have workshops associated with that. So yes. Yeah. Yeah. We will have those. So thank you.
So we're going to go to New York.